In this episode, we discuss the movie where Megan Fox has wings, possibly due to Red Bull abuse, Passion Play. Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
This voice should be associated with the name Elliot Kalin, for that is my name and this is my voice.
But you're talking weird.
What do you mean, Stuart? I always talk like this.
Hey, welcome.
Hey, what's going on?
Welcome to our podcast home.
Established. Welcome. Let's move on to step two, doing the podcast. Step one, welcoming the listeners, has been achieved. Great work, everybody. 10 out of 10. Let's move on.
Are you sure? I mean, were there any accidents during that time? Should we flip over the sign?
Nope, nothing. Nothing worth talking about, so let's just keep it moving. Let's just get on to the next stage, doing the podcast.
All right. Well, this is a podcast where we watch a movie.
Called The Flophouse.
Yeah.
A bad movie. The movie's called The Flophouse?
No, the podcast's called The Flophouse.
I'm sure that they know that if they download it.
Flophouse podcast. We watch a movie that is a flop in some way.
And we chat about it.
So we've already watched the movie.
Yes.
Okay. And now,
that's what happened earlier.
Okay.
Those were those series of pictures
was the proto step.
That were in front of your eyes earlier in the night, Stuart. And now we're on to the part where you talk about the thing that you saw.
And the thing we saw today was a movie called Passion Play.
Not to be confused.
Passion Play.
Yep. Passion Play. Not to be confused with the centuries-old Christian tradition of the same name.
Yeah.
This movie stars Michael Rourke, affectionately as Mickey.
Yeah, Mickey Rourke, also William Murray, also called Bill, and Meganathan Fox, also known as Meg Fox.
Meg Fox?
Or Megan Fox.
I mean, what, you know her really well?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, really well. Well, we're learning something.
Like, it was Anne Hathaway and Meg Fox when I was growing up.
We were both.
Well, he knows her as Bland Hathaway.
What?
Well, I never said that.
Well, because they were friends, so we could call her something funny. Mm.
Well, me and Meg Fox were just huge fans of Peter Benchley's book, Meg, about the giant sea monster.
Sure.
So I used to call her that. She called me Gem, which is Meg backwards.
That's weird. Why would she call you by her name backwards?
No, it's because we're both fans of the book Meg.
Oh, I get it.
Oh, well, you know what? Let's just forget I ever said I was friends with Megan Fox, okay? And move on. Riz Ifans is also in this movie.
Yeah.
Playing an evil carny barker.
That's who that was.
Yeah, Riz Ifans.
You may know him as
Notting
Lizard.
Hill.
You may know him as, weird guy from Notting Hill. You may know him as Balloon Crazy Guy from Enduring Love.
Or the Ape Man from Human Nature.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're talking a lot about him, since he has one of the smaller parts in the movie.
Yeah. He barely shows up in it.
This is really the story
it's
of...
It's really a three-person playlet.
Yes. And passion play, if you will.
Yeah.
This is really...
I'll be playing the role of Mickey Rourke.
Mm-hmm.
You can be Megan Fox, and you can be Riz Ifans.
No one's playing Bill Murray, the villain?
No. Not today.
So, should we can say what this movie's about?
Sure.
For anyone who doesn't know.
Why don't we stop and start over?
No, let's not do that.
Passion Play has, I think, it came out relatively recently, but it's become a little notorious already for being a bizarre and stupid movie.
Mickey Rourke apologized for it, right?
Before it came out, Mickey Rourke actually said in an interview that sometimes you make stinkers, like this one.
Well, and there have been several movies that Mickey Rourke has been in that he hasn't apologized for.
That are also terrible.
Yeah, so you get a baseline for what this movie might be like.
This movie was written and directed by Mitch Glazer, who also co-wrote Scrooged, among other things. And this was a passion project of his own. Mm-hmm. He was trying to get off the ground for about 20 years, starring friends of his. And it's really the story of young Mickelson Rourke, who plays a pile of mashed potatoes molded into a human form and then given a stringy wig and a hat, who is a jazz trumpet player who's down on his luck. He's a recovering junkie, and he's in bed with a local gangster named Happy. And is taken.
A gangster named Happy? Now I've heard everything.
Before, Happy was just the name of a son in Death of a Salesman, but now a gangster?
All right.
He's taken in out into the desert to be killed, I assume, for pissing off this gangster. But a band of random Indians in karate garb shoot the bad guy, and Mickey Rourke gets away. He wanders through the desert and comes upon a strange sideshow circus in the middle of the desert.
I mean, that's the gangster's fault. Like, you don't take a guy out into the desert and not expect to get killed by Kung Fu Indians.
Well, if you take him to Indian territory, yes. And if you take him to Kung Fu Indian territory, yeah, exactly.
Double
very
yes,
much
yeah.
so. Double
There's
yes.
a 50% Shame encounter chance.
There's like an 85% encounter chance. Okay. 15% chance of rain, which is also going to ruin your assassination, but just because you're going to get your shoes wet.
Yeah.
So anyway, he stumbles on this circus sideshow run by Riz Ifans as a filthy, stringy-haired fellow. Almost everyone in the movie has stringy hair. And he finds Megan Fox, an angel woman or bird girl, who has real wings on her back.
What's the difference between an angel woman and a bird girl?
Bird girl is kind of a derogatory racist term against... They prefer to be called angel women.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. I mean, she looks like an angel.
Well,
with her smile and her eyes.
I don't know about
silky
that.
Silky hair.
You know, just being the perfect figure of womanhood.
It looks more like a robot designed by an alien trying to lure a human man into a spaceship.
And in this case, succeeded by luring Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, so...
Data monster.
So when he meant to get a man, and he accidentally got a food golem.
Yep. Flophouse, the podcast where we insult all of Hollywood's top stars.
Yeah, top stars like Mickey Rourke. So
he's gonna come over and grab us with those weird hands of his, with those fingernails that are too big for his stumpy fingers.
Yeah,
and he's gonna shake us.
Shake us so hard. Long story short, Mickey Rourke falls in love with the bird girl, but first he kind of cons her into leaving the circus and joining him. But his plan is he's gonna kind of trade her to the gangster, Bill Murray, in exchange for his own life. But he falls in love with her and feels bad about doing that and is going to repent. But then the gangster comes along and kidnaps the girl, takes her to his house, and forces her to watch the movie Brute Force with Burt Lancaster, which is a fantastic movie.
She was hating it.
She did not seem to like it very much. Mickey Rourke comes by and says, "Come with me," blah, blah, blah. And she says, "No, I'm staying." And it's clear that she's giving up her life to save his life.
Yeah, clear to everyone but Mickey Rourke.
But Mickey Rourke, who is dumb as a bag of rocks, he resolves to get her back and eventually does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's on display as, like, sort of an art object in a weird, like...
Bill Murray lives with her in a hotel for a little bit until Riz Ifans comes by and tries to get her back. Bill Murray shoots him in the chest and then decides, I guess, it's time to put this girl on display.
Yeah,
so she's standing in a glass box covering her boobs, wearing just underpants, and Mickey Rourke comes by, smashes the glass box, saves her.
Well, local rich people and debutantes stare at her.
Just kind of look on. Mm-hmm. They escape to the roof of a building, and Megan Fox has established by now that she can float when the wind hits her just right, but she can't fly.
Because her wings are fucking tiny.
They're not big enough. Mm-hmm. But Mickey Rourke...
delicate lady wings.
Yeah, but I mean, she's
not
a human
like big
body
wings like you have.
I mean... Yeah, your big manly wings. You're regular Hawkman.
That's
yeah,
what
you're
I was
like Duran Duran from that's, Barbarella.
That's what I was trying to do, is draw attention to me having wings by making fun of her. I'm
your
sorry,
regular,
guys. It was out of line.
You're regular Brian Blessed from Flash Gordon. And Mickey Rourke to, I guess, force her. It's a Dumbo moment to force her believe in herself. He jumps off the roof. Megan Fox dives after him and catches him and manages to fly. Oh my god, it's amazing, she's flying. And they fly over deserts, and he looks down and sees his own dead body. It turns out he was dead the whole time, and he dreamed the whole thing. It's a real Ambrose Bierce.
Well, I mean, did he dream the whole thing, or this is like, maybe he was in sort of a purgatory, and now he's redeemed.
Okay, that's another way to say it. Purgatory is a series of shitty jazz clubs, laundromats, and circuses.
Or a terrible movie that you have to watch for a while, and then you're redeemed at the end, and it ends.
And that's the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. So this is an hour and a half movie with almost no plot in it. A lot of scenes where characters just kind of murmur for a long time with each other.
But just a gorgeous film, just beautiful to look at. Just
not exactly.
Real...
Yeah, I mean,
if you like,
I thought I was the sarcastic one.
Are we gonna have to rehand out personas?
Yeah.
Oh. So now Dan's now the sarcastic one. Okay. Stuart's now the know-it-all, and I am the boring guy.
Excuse me. I'm adjusting my glass. You can't see that. Ambrose Bierce.
Okay.
Let's just do this right, okay, guys?
Wow. Wow, I don't like this. Let's switch back. I don't
okay,
care.
Okay, we'll go back. Let's touch that magic skull in the middle of the table and get our personalities back. Okay, we're back. So no, it's actually a terrible looking movie, which is weird considering that it was shot by Christopher Doyle, who is an amazing cinematographer. Works with Wong Kar Wai in a lot of movies. If anyone saw In the Mood for Love, especially, it's a beautiful movie. This is, however, a terrible-looking movie.
And that's, like, you would think it'd be easy with such beautiful subjects like Mickey Rourke's face.
Like Mickey Rourke's face.
Bill Murray's face. Shitty sets. A lot of green screens.
There's a lot of... Anyone listening has seen The Room, where every time they go up on the roof, it's green screen of the San Francisco skyline. Those green screens are a little bit better than the ones in this movie. It's terrible green screen work.
Yeah, this movie is a series of unflattering, flatly lit close-ups in hotel rooms and empty stadiums and
empty restaurants,
empty theaters. like a museum that's sort of blandly
mainly of Mickey. Mickey Rourke's face gets a lot of screen time,
mm-hmm. and his beautiful chest
and his weird hairless round torso also gets a fair amount of screenplay. This is a movie that was written 20 years ago with Mickey Rourke in mind, I think, at the time. Okay. So, like, 20 years ago, you could buy Mickey Rourke as, like, a down-on-his-luck but still sexually attractive jazz musician.
20 years later, I mean, he's got the world at his feet.
I don't know if that's exactly
that was where
the way,
he was going with that. I mean,
an Adonis.
Yeah, now he is just the apex of human perfection.
There's certainly more of him now.
Yeah.
More of him to love.
Making fun of Mickey Rourke's physical appearance aside, what do you think of his performance, Dan?
This is where Elliot and I differ. I mean, like, he certainly was mumbly. We can both agree. Elliot and I can both agree on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I assume that before every take, he put a bag of marbles in his mouth.
I think that he put in as good a performance as he could with this material.
Yeah, do you assume the director's assuming that Mickey Rourke's going to mumble? You don't get Mickey Rourke and you're like, hey, enunciate, man.
Yeah, that's
what are you
true.
Doing?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
It's like, hey, scorpion, stop stinging me. You can't expect that.
Here's what I think that Mickey Rourke, as crazy as this
scorpion
fucking
animal,
movie was.
I thought you meant the Mortal Kombat character.
Because he doesn't sting you, he kills you with uppercuts.
Yeah. that's the sting of man.
As crazy as this fucking movie was, and as much as Mickey Rourke badmouthed afterwards, I felt like I watch him in the movie, I was like, okay, well, he believes what he's doing. His movie's terrible, but he believes what he's doing.
He doesn't sleepwalk through the role, that's true.
And I thought
he
that Bill Murray
and stumbles his way through, but he believes in this stupid character.
Bill Murray also put in the best performance he could under the circumstances. And Megan Fox is not a good actress, but she is trying, I can tell. Like, she thinks she's in something.
A pretty good job of imagining she has wings.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
I don't think that any of the actors are at fault for this movie. Like, this movie's fault lies on the writer director.
It's not a very good story, and it's poorly paced and very slow. And there's a lot of scenes of characters just kind of looking around or mumbling to each other.
There's that weird moment about 15 minutes into the movie, or maybe 20 minutes into the movie, where that female character whose role I don't remember. Basically just recounts everything that has happened up until that point.
Oh, Kelly Lynch's character.
Yeah.
Who's Mickey Rourke's kind of confidant.
Yeah, and she figures into the movie not at all. Like, there's no plot purpose for her.
She shows up later to wake him up from a heroin-induced stupor.
She's the Watson to Mickey Rourke's Sherlock, who gets the story told to her, I guess, and also her husband wrote and directed the movie, so that's also why she's in it. But Well, I had something to say, and
we can all agree that this is a story that needed to be told, right?
Certainly. Well, here's the thing. Here's what I was going to say. In any movie that's attempting to reach a kind of sublime quality, the director or writer is taking a huge risk, because if it isn't balanced right, it comes off looking stupid or ridiculous. And like a movie that I've mentioned many times on this podcast, The Fall, is a movie that I think achieves that, but takes a big risk in a certain naivete that you need to achieve, like, that real sublime quality. This movie does not achieve it, and it falls flat on its face. And I admire, it feels like the writer-director, like, put his soul into the movie, and I admire that, but he did such a crappy job of it, and the story is so non-existent and boring that I wish that he had, like, not done it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, part
the people making this movie take a big risk and fail utterly. You know.
Well, he kind of expects you to care for the Mickey Rourke character a lot more than I think you're ever given reason to do.
Rourke is supposed to be like a charismatic rogue, but instead he is a mumbly sack.
But also, as I was complaining during the movie, I think that everything that the villain played by Bill Murray says is valid. Like, he explains to Megan Fox, this guy traded your life for his, and that's not wrong, but for some reason we're supposed to like Mickey Rourke just because we've been with him for the first part of the movie, I guess? Just because he's fallen in love with Megan Fox, and it's like, yeah, you can fall in love with someone and still treat them like shit. Like, that happens all the time. That doesn't make you a good guy.
Yeah.
She's Megan Fox, and she's got wings. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is that...
It's amazing.
Yeah. What more? What more do you want? I mean, the only thing that would make Megan Fox better would be if she had huge bird wings.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's
like
what every man wants.
Maybe like a bird's head, too.
Or maybe if she was holding like a giant pizza or something. Then you get everything.
I like to believe that any woman gets an extra beautiful point from Stewart if she's holding a giant pizza.
Yeah, of course. You got a beautiful babe, beautiful pizza.
Mm-hmm.
What if she had a pizza in one hand and like a beer in the other hand?
Oh my God, Elliot, stop it.
Can't handle it. Okay. You're getting red in the face.
This is turning into like a Red Shoe Diaries type thing, right?
Well, there was something you mentioned while we were watching the movie, Stuart, which is that this is what a Zalman King production looks like with no sex scenes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one sex scene between Mickey Rourke and Megan Fox, which is horrifying. But it feels like that.
It's the second worst sex scene featuring a feather I've ever seen.
And what would the first one be?
The 40 Days and 40 Nights, where Josh Hartnett makes Shannon Sossamon climax by blowing a feather on her belly.
It's just that easy. It's just that easy to make a woman climax.
She was aching for it.
But no,
she was
aching
for it.
I think that was...
She was clay aching for it.
That was...
She was achy breaking heart for it.
That was, I think, the most trenchant criticism of this movie, because it is exactly like a movie you would see on Cinemax late at night with all the sex excised. So it's got the same, like...
Sex-ized.
Weird, like, draggy, like, of cheap locations.
Yeah, it's a lot of scenes of characters doing something to get to the next scene or killing time until the next scene starts. And in a softcore movie, that would be a sex scene, but here it's not. So you go to another scene of Mickey Rourke lying around mumbling to somebody, or Bill Murray saying something kind of funny, but...
Or if somebody was trying to make a parody of a David Lynch movie and just forgot to make it funny, that would be kind of what this movie is.
It feels very much like someone who was trying for that David Lynch style of, like, weirdness that affects you and didn't get it.
Like the freak show that just seems to be like a bunch of people doing stuff in a tent, and they let the people just walk around, people nailing
like
stuff into
freak,
their heads.
It looked like a freak like show expo for like the freak industry, where there's just a lot of platforms, the freaks doing their stuff, and then you have the other exhibitors just wandering around like, oh yeah, that's good. Oh,
yeah,
what are they doing?
Tags on lanyards. And
what are they doing with their bearded lady?
If you
oh,
want
nice.
These
Long
new 2012
lady.
Freaks? You gotta.
And like there's a raffle to win a freak, that kind of thing.
A castle freak.
No.
That's a castle freak expo.
All right, speaking of, this is going to be a digression, but I got to take Stu to task for something.
Is this related to Passion Play, the film of the same name?
No, it's not. But if this podcast is about nothing, if it's not about digressions, and I recently saw the film Castle Freak.
Okay, that sounds like you had a good afternoon.
I had a fine afternoon.
Watched it in the early afternoon.
That's a 2 p.m. movie.
The problem I have to have, I'm going to
get your
confirm.
Hot pocket out of the oven.
Wait, is that a thing that substitutes for a vagina?
No, you eat a hot pocket at 2 p.m. right? It's like a lunchtime thing, right?
No, I...
Everyone has a Hot Pocket at 2 p.m.?
No, but I mean, that could be a lunch thing. I'm not saying...
You're eating lunch at 2?
Why are you thinking something gross? I was talking about...
Because you're talking about it.
Okay, Danny.
So, we had a letter a while back about... I think it was titled Ding Dong Gate. About a letter from...
Yep, that's what brought down Richard Dixon.
A listener complaining that there was, in fact, no ding dong ripping.
Yep.
In Castle Freak, and I have to confirm this.
Somebody frame by frame did.
The titular Castle Freak has no ding dong. It's been ripped off at some point, but that happens off screen. That happens prior to the movie's chronology.
So you're saying all these years that Stewart is promising somebody ripping their own ding dong off.
Now there is a scene. Hold on. There is a scene where the castle freak bites off a prostitute's nipple. Okay. So I imagine that in your mind you conflated the biting off of the prostitute's nipple and the missing ding dong of the castle freak into the castle freak ripping his own ding dong.
This is like an episode of Columbo.
Yeah. Are you putting yourself into
shoes? Just one more thing, Stuart.
When I first saw Castle Freak 15 years ago, imagining that you're drunk and stupid and probably full of hormones or whatever I was.
Holy shit, that guy just ripped his own ding-dong off.
Yep, and or maybe one of my drunk or high buddies said that, and I just went along with it.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
are you saying
weird.
I now have to make some kind of letter of apology to all those dudes who listen to my podcast and have managed to talk their friends into watching Castle Freak?
Cause on the basis
hey,
of
hey, I heard that this guy ripped a ding-dong off. And his friends were like, that sounds really awesome.
Well, I think that if you don't apologize to them, we have a potential class action suit on our hands.
Full Moon Pictures?
A bunch of Flophouse
with
listeners.
All the money I spent on their fucking action figures?
No.
All those Puppet Master dolls that you bought?
All those Flophouse listeners out there who have spent the money to rent Castle Freak based on the ding-dong ripping.
Where can you rent Castle Freak at?
The only way to see Castle Freak is to say Castle Freak three times in a blind alley. A tiny gnome appears, gives you a reel of film. You trade that in a nightclub to a giant spider. The spider scurries away, gets a videotape. You watch the videotape, then you get a phone call. Tells you in a week there's going to be a ghost girl in a location, TBD.
Sounds right.
You go there, you give her $10 in pennies.
She hits you pennies.
Okay. But in a girl's panty.
Okay.
She hits you twice on both sides of the face with a fish. And then you fall asleep, and when you wake up, you have a memory of having seen Castle Freak.
Well, I mean,
that's
sure.
The only way to see it.
I mean, I got it from Netflix, so I don't know what.
Maybe you didn't see the right version then.
Okay, you're probably right.
I think this is the way you see the unrated version.
All right.
Yeah, you have to see it at 2 p.m.
Yeah,
that
maybe I saw the unrated
scene.
Version.
I looked up the unrated version on IMDb. There's no ding-dong ripping in that.
Was one of the keywords not ding-dong rip?
Under trivia, it said, Stuart Wellington falsely claims there's a ding-dong ripped off.
Do not believe
Star him. Jeffrey Combs disagrees.
All right, well, to get back to the movie.
So passion play.
Passion
so anyway,
play.
I guess, viewers, you're going to have to watch Castle Freak yourself and the unrated version to see who's
Decide
right.
Decide for yourself.
In the battle of the casts, Stuart or Dan.
Are you cool like Stuart or like a grouchy dude like Dan?
Stuart Wellington, the raging Cajun, and Dan McCoy, the bland band. Together again for one show.
I was on board with the grouchy part, but I don't know about the bland.
Yeah, I mean,
slouchy grouch?
Mm-hmm. Slouchy grouch, I'll take it.
So passion play.
There's not a lot to say about it except
there's
that
great
crazy.
Moment where RZA fans.
Okay,
where he pours Mickey
fan
Rourke
of the RZA.
A drink before slapping it right out of his hand. That was pretty great.
This is a movie where no lie. This is a movie about a woman with wings and a gangster tracking down a jazz musician. The best part of the movie, the best thing about it, is at one point there's a glimpse of a bottle of liquor and the label says Gordon Shumway's. That is, and for those who don't remember, Gordon Shumway is Alf's real name. So this is a
Alf from the television show Alf.
Thanks for clarifying to the people who are listening to this podcast.
I said Alf really fast, so I just want to clarify. The alien life
Gordon
form.
Fucking Shumway is.
Oh, you're mad at me. I thought you were mad at Dan.
Both. I'm mad at both of you right now.
So while this,
you're just mad that the ding dong ripping never happened.
While this dumb story about a woman with wings is going on, Alf is running a distillery somewhere in that universe, and we are not seeing that story.
So do you think that's small batch gin? Like, do you think that's craft gin?
I think it started that way, but I think it got way big. He's long sold out, and he's just making mass-produced gin.
I mean, we haven't heard a lot from Alf recently.
He had that talk show for a little bit.
That's true.
I don't know how long ago that was. I'd say he went back to Melmac, but everyone knows that was destroyed.
He's kind of like a Dan Aykroyd figure. He's mainly in booze now.
And he keeps promising Ghostbusters 3.
Speaking of which, as Stewart said during the movie, Bill Murray is not going to make Ghostbusters 3, but he's going to make this film.
He's going to make Passion Play. I'll tell you what.
Every fan of Ghostbusters rent Passion Play and get really mad about it.
If making Passion Play stops Ashton Kutcher from becoming a Ghostbuster, then I'm all for it.
Wait, Ashton Kutcher is going to be a Ghostbuster?
After they, Ivan Reitman kept saying, like, oh, yeah, we want, it's going to
like
be
Ghostbuster Kids,
a new generation of Ghostbusters, like Ashton Kutcher and, I don't
Stop
know who else he
that.
Said.
Maybe hurts my brain.
Seth Green.
Every time you say it. Here's a problem with this movie.
Okay.
You're talking about
me. Cause this
is that like
flawless.
A next generation of Goonies? Like...
Well, there's, what do you mean the next generation of
Goonies?
I thought
Goonies. They were going to make another Goonies movie and do it with, like, Goonies kids.
Mm-hmm. Goonies Jr.?
Yeah, the
Goonies.
No, that was the
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, like
the
with
Goonies,
a little baby sloth.
The Goonies were supposed to have grown up, and then their kids were the next generation of Goonies.
And when was this going to happen?
I don't know. They
because you could do that
it.
With any movie. Casablanca 2.
Yeah.
The characters have grown up, now the kids are in trouble with the Nazis.
Well, I like don't it. Know.
Schindler's List 2.
Historically.
The characters have grown up and now their kids are in trouble with the Nazis.
You might want to look into when the Nazis happened and like
I don't
how
think
long.
So.
That...
It can be space Nazis.
Von Ryan's Express 2. Von Ryan's an old man. Now his kids are in trouble with the Nazis.
Sure.
Hogan's Heroes.
Sophie's Choice 2.
Let's just let LA keep naming things.
What I'm saying is there are a lot of movies with Nazis as the villains.
No, you're talking about a movie that seeks transcendence. Part of the problem with this movie is like. All the transcendence it's seeking is dependent on the ending of the film, but the ending of the film is like a shitty twist. Like for
if that's a twist when like, she can fly. And
no, that he's been dead.
That he's been dead the whole time.
Like if all of the meaning of the film is weighted on.
Wait a minute.
Uh-oh. I feel a mirror is coming on.
It's happening again.
Wait, he was dead?
That's why they see his body at the end when they fly away.
I thought that was just a weird shot, like he was tired after flying around.
Wait, so
he was
resting
at himself.
So wait, that's why he had such a weird look on his face when she was flying him around?
Because he realized he was dead and he was about to go to heaven.
Okay. Wait, really?
Yeah, or...
So, how'd he die?
He was shot.
At the beginning of the movie.
So, wait, they had ninjas in the...
He wasn't saved ninjas. By the ninja engines. The ninja engines failed to save him.
Wait. Okay, so he was dead the whole time.
He was dead from the moment that guy brought him to the desert and was about to shoot him.
So who saved the girl with the wings?
She never
no
existed.
Girl with the wings.
Okay,
I mean, she might be an angel, but...
Oh, we forgot to mention the scene where Megan Fox goes to a plastic surgeon to get her wings removed, and...
And the guy looks like Roger Sterling.
He's like a poor man's Roger Sterling, and Mickey Rourke comes in and says, "Don't do this," and takes her out. And
he's like... She can't live a normal life with wings like this, which is what any doctor would say.
And Mickey Rourke says, "So what's so great about normal?"
Mm-hmm. Moral,
and then, which
moral
and then we had to pause the movie and look at each other and agree
just
with him.
Let it sink in, yeah. Ugh, not since Lucas have I been hit so hard with that lesson.
It was like a scene on X3, The Last Stand, or what's the third X-Men movie?
I don't know. That angel in it.
Yeah, the one
someone with wings.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
No, but like to freight so much meaning on what is essentially a stupid, it was all a dream.
Well,
ending.
But also along the way, like I think you're supposed to find the imagery of the woman with wings beautiful. You're supposed to find their love story touching. Like you're supposed to be inspired that by the end when she proves she can fly. Like along the way, you're supposed to be getting little epiphanies. Except they all fall totally flat.
So wait. If it was like a purgatory type thing, what did he really accomplish? Like, he didn't really do that much other than, like, take a weird chick with tattoos home and get stuck with a heroin needle.
Oh, we didn't mention
he
that
saved,
part.
He saved
As part
her.
Of the circus ringleader's revenge is that he has a girl seduce Mickey Rourke.
He should have known something was wrong right away.
and she gets him hooked on the junk again.
By the way,
how did he
seduce this lady?
Well, Mickey Rourke walks into a bar. Stop me if you've heard this one. Mickey Rourke walks into a bar and sees a lady at the other end and takes lemons out of a basket because this is one of those bars where lemons are provided
in
a basket.
Yeah, you get to make your own garnish.
And puts a lemon under a napkin and then just kind of rolls it over to her as if it's a tiny car or like there's a little mouse under the, like I just
well,
made
see,
a mouse. You put a napkin on a lemon.
It seems at first like he's going to do a magic trick. He's like, here's the lemon. I'm putting it on the bar. I'm putting a napkin under it. It's going to disappear.
And then he just nudges it towards her.
And it almost falls off at one point. He has to like reset it in the middle of the bar.
And she is delighted by this.
She's not more charmed.
And of course, it's because she was sent there to seduce him and get him heroined up. But
it should have been a sign to the audience that this is a setup.
Yeah,
because
that,
no woman falls for that. I've tried it.
Falls for the old lemon under the napkin trick. Have you tried it?
I've tried it. It doesn't work. They just get up and walk away.
Well, I mean, I think that's mainly because it was put in the secret, and now all the ladies know.
You mean the game?
The game.
The secret is about wishing for what you want.
That book about wishing your way into women's pants, right?
That's what the secret was? Game. The Secret Garden, I think that's what that's called.
So this
movie, I think, can be summed up in two scenes. Three scenes can sum this movie up. One is Megan Fox with poorly CGI'd bird wings in front of a poorly green-screened vista. Two is Mickey Rourke attracting a woman by nudging a lemon under a napkin across a bar. And the third is Mickey Rourke meeting with Bill Murray in a restaurant, and then there's just a gratuitous shot of Mickey Rourke getting up out of the booth that they're in, and it is not a flattering shot.
Yeah. Have you ever seen an old lady try and get out of a car that she parked, and it takes her a minute, and she has to kind of brace her arm against the side of the car, and it takes her about three tries to get her leg out all the way?
That's a little bit what it's like, but it's Mickey Rourke, the hero of the movie. Just like, how is he going to defeat Bill Murray? He can barely defeat this booth. He can barely defeat a table.
Yeah, like who's the set Joker? Who's the guy who set up the set so it looks hard for him to get out?
That's set Batman's villain, the set Joker. So tell me, I hear you're a real Batman on the set.
I bet you did a lot of pranks.
This is a movie. The character, nothing is. I mean,
characters aren't welcome in this movie. Unlike
USA Network, it's supposed to be kind of unbelievable because it's supposed to be dreamlike, but nothing the characters do is remotely believable.
Phantasmagoric.
Mickey Rourke, who looks like, I mean, we've already said enough about his appearance, but he looks like a monster. Talks his way into Megan Fox's trailer, and then it's just like characters doing things that, like, it's hard. You know, that scene doesn't make sense. You don't believe it. You don't believe they have a relationship. You don't believe anything.
Well, his first
happens.
Conversation with the carny ringmaster guy, where the ringmaster's like, "Who, like, where can she go? Who would take her in? Like, everyone would take her in. She's a beautiful girl with wings. She'll be fine. Like, people think she's an angel or something.
Yeah, she could start her
own
religion.
She'll be super famous.
Yeah, it's a movie that is. You know, there's a lot of things going on that you can't buy. And when you pile up too much on it.
And he has the idea that he's going to trade this girl for his life. Like, why doesn't he just go to a different city? He'd be fine. He'd be fine. He could play his trumpet or jazz trumpet. There's that great scene where he has to sell his jazz trumpet, I'm guessing, on Craigslist. And it takes him about 20 minutes of touching the trumpet case before he eventually gives it up.
But he takes the mouthpiece.
Yeah.
Because I guess
he blows wistfully into.
He doesn't want the new owner to get his herpy, I guess. So.
By the way,
single herpy.
I mean, this is a tiny criticism, but the least.
Isn't that Lena Dunham movie, Tiny Criticism?
This is the least convincing fake trumpet playing from Mickey Rourke. There's a scene where he plays trumpet.
Because Megan Fox is a fake trumpet.
Let's set the scene.
I know what it looks like when someone plays trumpet, though.
There's a lot of eyebrow movement, right?
A lot of dancing.
Did it.
Your gums start just bleeding.
There's no, like you watch someone who plays the trumpet, they're puffing their cheeks out like crazy. I mean, you see pictures of Louis Armstrong, he might as well be a bullfrog with the amount of, like, cheek action that goes on.
There's a limit to how much Mickey Rourke's cheeks can blow out, by the way.
Don't move at all.
I think they're incapable. There's not a lot of slack left in those cheeks. He's whistling into his trumpet. He thinks he played it like he played kazoo.
Yeah.
But here's that's also a scene that's problematic. Mickey Rourke walks into the hotel room he's sharing with Megan Fox, and he says, "Put on your best dress. We're going out."
Which no clothes.
Megan she was standing, by the way, in front of a bunch of empty clothes hangers.
Megan Fox is standing in front of a clothes rack with nothing but empty hangers on it.
And instead of the joke we were all expecting, which is like, "I don't have any other clothes," she's like, "Why?" Of course, turning out that she does have a really nice dress.
She does have a really nice dress. And Mickey Rourke takes her to an empty theater. How we got there, who he knows, and, you know, to set it up.
No, the power of love, Elliot.
And, yeah, it is a curious thing.
Mm-hmm. Make one man weep.
Make one man weep and make another man get into an empty theater at night. He sets up two chairs on the stage, and they look at a painted backdrop of the ocean or a shoreline, because earlier she's never seen the ocean. And they just kind of sit there for a while, and then he takes out his trumpet and plays it. And do they dance? Like, that's kind of
No, the camera just spins around them for a long time.
Yeah.
Much longer than you think a camera spin would last.
But it's just this whole scene. Every next step in the scene, you're like, wait, what? Like, is this really where we're going with this? Come on. Movie. Okay,
and I didn't know it was going to be
but
a romance at
pants.
That point. And then
you can't argue with results.
That's true. But he managed to bag that bird.
Mickey Rourke in. Bag that bird.
That's the porn sequel to Follow That Bird, yep. The Sesame Street movie.
That's the one where, what, Big Bird has sex with somebody?
Yeah,
or?
With everybody.
Everybody.
Not just somebody.
A title not on, like, Catch That Kid from our previous...
Oh, you mean Ghost Rider, Catch That Kid? Yeah. Last episode's movie?
Sure.
So, bagging the bird. So, we did get a sex scene.
We did get a sex scene.
There was,
scene.
You know, some kissing.
And a sax scene.
A sax. Yep, where The Wire's Bunny Colvin plays a saxophone.
Yep, and a sucks scene. The whole movie.
Burn.
Good one.
But yeah, he meets up with The Wire saxophone player in a laundromat, and they just kind of talk for a while.
Yeah, why are we talking about this anymore?
Okay, well, let's move on to final judgments.
You win, movie. You got
you
me.
Really
was this a good bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked, Stuart?
Let's tease this one out. This is clearly a bad movie. I mean, I think there's elements of it that are almost good bad enough. And you know what? If you and your buddies want to watch a shitty movie, and you've already seen The Room, you've already seen Troll 2, and you want another shitty movie, hey, pop this one in. You'll probably be delighted.
I don't know. It's very dull. I'd say get Birdemic, but...
Okay, so Elliot says... Watch Birdemic?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a bad from you, Elliot.
I would also say a bad. I would say I admire the ambition of the people behind it, I do not admire the incompetent execution. And also, the concept is bad. So, bad movie. It's not fun or entertaining in any way to sit through.
I am going to go out on a limb, give it a marginal good bad.
Kind of what I just did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's more open about it.
It's so weird, and there's so much miscalculation. I mean, it is a little too dull to be a classic good bad movie. There's not that, like, wait, what? Like, every second that, like, a good, yeah, good bad movie...
Where'd that cigarette come from?
It's more like, there is one scene like that, where Mickey Rourke is on the phone, and then suddenly he's just ringed with smoke as he's smoking a cigarette. I don't think we saw him light.
But, I mean, like, this is that kind of... dramatic failure that I feel you don't see in movies as much as...
It's an intriguing bad movie.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, they were trying for something. It didn't happen, but...
Hey, look, Megan Fox learned to soar at the end, but unfortunately Passion Play fell to the ground.
But we learned to snore at the end.
All right, well, I went for poetry and you went for a Gene Shalit rhyme. So I guess highbrow, lowbrow. That's what you get on the Flophouse.
So
we range from the heights of poetic excess to the lows of Burma Shave jingle writing.
Okay,
what's our next segment? So we finished the talking about the movie phase. Now we move into what, full phase? Well, what part of the Human Centipede is this?
Yes, this is full sequence.
Full sequence. Oh, yeah, sequence, not phase.
This is the moment where we read letters from people that tell us how great we are, and then we agree with them and make fun of each other a little bit at the same time.
A little
time.
Bit. And sometimes they ask us questions about movie stuff, and we answer it. And
that
sometimes I sing a song like this. Letters from the Flop House. No, no, no. Letters to the Flop House. There you go. That's what we're going to read. That's what we're going to talk about. Letters to the Flop House from you and you and you and you. Letters to the Flop House from you and you and you and him. Letters to the Flop House from you. What about me and you?
So now they've just turned their podcast off mute.
Are you kidding?
Wait, can you do that?
Someone literally just held their podcast player up to a phone and said, you know that new sound you've been looking for? Well, here it is.
Before we get into letters...
That was one of my more controlled songs.
Yeah. It was tight, comparatively. Before we get into letters... I want to thank P. Bracken and B. Skinner for donations.
B. F. Skinner, the famed psychologist.
I can only assume. and I want to acknowledge also that on the website...
Thanks to both of those people. We appreciate it.
In the comments section, someone pointed out that...
Well, we made a mistake.
The character from Ghostbusters 2 was not named Milos. His name was, of course, Janosch.
Oh...
Yeah.
How did we get that one wrong?
It's a shameful day when we get a Ghostbusters 2 reference.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
But
I guess we should just give up.
You know what? Let's throw in the towel. Because I'm just wearing a towel right now.
This letter is from Steve, last name withheld, and he says, "Dearest Flophouse, I was intrigued as Stuart was as to how far you can stretch a naming convention like One for the Money. Apparently quite far."
Oh, yeah.
"Although terrible plum puns were used as filler." And he sent a link to a list of One for the Money, Janet Ivanovich
books.
Titles.
All read by Elliot.
I'm going to run these
read
down.
Read out loud, of course.
On Audible.
Yeah.
We got One for the Money, Two for the Dough, Three to Get Deadly.
Oh, I like that one.
Four to Score.
What?
High Five, Hot Six, Seven Up, Hard Eight, Visions of Sugar Plums.
Wait, what? That's
Wait,
not,
hold on. Okay. Visions of Sugar Plums, parentheses, Between the Numbers Holiday Novella, To the Nines, 10 Big Ones, 11 on Top. I don't know what that is.
12 on the bottom.
12 sharp.
Friday the 13th.
Now it's just you naming things. Let's move on.
Plum Lovin'. Wait. Again, Between the Numbers Holidays Novella. Lean Mean 13. Plum Lucky.
We're really going to go through
Between
all
these? Between the Numbers Holiday Novella.
So this is not...
Fearless 14. Oh,
that's not even a pun or a phrase or anything.
Plum Spooky, Between the Numbers novel. Finger Lickin' 15. I don't know. Finger Lickin' 15.
That's another way of saying San Quentin Quail. You know, like a young girl.
Sizzlin' 16.
That's another way of saying that.
Smokin' 17.
Again, yes.
Explosive 18.
Oh.
Yeah, that just gets lazy after a little while.
Yeah.
Naughty 19. No. 2020. And 2021 again.
He says, "You should all consider yourself fortunate that a bad, bad movie might take 2 to 3 hours from your usual life instead of the significantly more time a bad book does. Keep up the excellent look, or the excellent work.
Thank you.
The laugh out loud laughter you provide is worth the angry glare I get on London's tube. If this gets read on the podcast, I look forward to the opportunity that this will give Elliot to put on a British accent."
"What accent would that be?" That's says Daniel Craig.
"Well, hello. Daniel Craig is here with me, generic British man. Well, I suppose I'll get on the lorry and drive to my flat, then put on my braces. Fish and chips, of course. The Queen, Parliament, Big Ben, Thames. Merry old England, and so forth."
"What's all this then?"
He goes on to say, "Or a return of Dan's eerily perfect Michael Caine. You'll be happy to know that there are at least 2 British Flophouse fans." And that's from Steve, last name with
Oh, I'm sorry, that's, I didn't know
course,
this ahead of time.
Of Steve looked. And Clive Owen over here.
Clive Owen and Daniel Craig sound a lot alike.
I know, it's weird, right? How they just left.
James Mason is here as well.
Oh.
And also the Joseph A. Banks guy.
"Mr. Kaplan, please. Games, must we?"
Oh, Kalen. My grandfather changed it to Kalen in the early 50s.
Well,
the old Englishman is here as well.
I wish
I had known Steve as a Flophouse fan when I was in England about a month ago. I looked him up.
Yeah.
Maybe next time, pal. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. I always like it when we have international listeners, but I like it when we have American listeners, too.
So this next...
not a joke.
Going out on a limb there, I like that.
You know what? I like all of them.
I apologize to this next writer. I appear to have cut off his name, so I don't know who this is
from. Oh, I also want to mention, of those Stephanie Plum, Janet Ivanovich novels, I probably have bought 2/3 of them for my mother as birthday presents at one point or another.
Is she going to listen to this podcast and be upset?
No, she doesn't listen to this.
Wait, your mom doesn't listen to this every week?
No. We don't even put it out every week.
Well, she listens to the episode a second time, so she catches all the
nuances. Oddly enough, my parents listen to this podcast, which disturbed me greatly.
Yeah, it disturbed me, too. Because your parents are weirdos.
What?
Booters?
So, again, I apologize, though, to the writer of this next letter. No, I was saying this, and then Elliot cut me off. I apologize for not having the name attached to this email.
So we'll just assume Dan wrote it himself.
Yeah. It says, "Hey, floppity doodahs, Q. Elliot singing. Every now and then..."
Floppity doodah, floppity-yay.
It's probably not Dan.
Floppity day. Flopping up here and flopping down there. Flopping around and everywhere. Okay. There's a flopper
anyway,
on my
every
flopper.
Now and then, a present
the flop,
is
it's
given
floppy
to me.
Every flop is floppy fluffle.
By the great old ones of cyberspace. So today was Christmas come early when I found the trailer for Alex Cross. The phrase "best movie in history of everything" is thrown out a lot, but the trailer for Alex Cross
can't say I've ever heard that
shows this to be an apropos phrase for this stunning masterpiece. Let's count the reasons for genius. Number one, Tyler Perry is an action cop, serial killer hunter, FBI profiler, or something. If you didn't read that right, this is the famous cross-dresser Tyler Perry, Q house cat. Number two, jacked
this
up...
This guy really has this wrapped around his finger.
Number two, jacked up, shaved head, MMA fighting albino over-enunciating ex-military serial killer played by Matthew Fox from the great and should-have-been-flopcasted Speed Racer. Number three, verbal cliches thrown around like an early 90s thriller. It's got to be two to three guys to pull this off. No, it's one guy. I'm fascinated by Payne. He's ex-military, judging by his tactics.
Did someone write in just with a review of the Alex Cross trailer? What does this have to do with us?
What's the money to pay? What's the world to suffer?
I think this is viral marketing for the Alex Cross movie.
Number four, visual cliches thrown around
like Tyler last name with
thrown around, but like CSI visual cliches thrown around, but like CSA Miami Candy, serial killer pasting a newspaper clipping to a mirror, running down a dark tunnel. Wife in peril. Daughter slow-mo piano playing. Rocket launcher blowing up government trucks.
I think this is just an E. Cummings poem now.
Number five. This catchphrase. Don't ever cross Alex Cross. Number six. Flophouse fave Eddie Burns. Number seven. And lastly, scuba gear. I think my head might explode.
Wasn't that dog that solved crimes underwater?
Scuba gear?
Yeah.
So he says, enjoy in my recommendation for a Flophouse theater excursion.
Okay, well, thanks the producers of Alex Cross for advertising on our podcast.
I think that's a legitimate. What's illegitimate about that is they're talking about a trailer that looks crazy.
You're right. Okay,
I thought this was the podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. Not the write to us about your favorite trailers podcast. No offense, no name withheld. It's just I appreciate your writing in.
Now I feel better about cutting this guy's name off. If Elliot was going to rip him a new one.
Tore him a whole new one.
Yeah, a whole new thing.
Yeah, he doesn't have to buy one because Elliot just ripped him one.
Why would you buy one?
Certainly not.
Elliot's handing him out.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You're right. I'm giving these things away for free when I could be charging.
All right.
So,
well, if you didn't like that, here's a much more concise letter.
I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just questioned the appropriateness.
It's about a bad movie, theoretically. So this is from...
Joke's on you guys, because that Alex Cross movie is going to be awesome.
This is from someone called Collision.
That's... Okay. It might be an insurance company.
It's
titled Lower Rates for Your Auto Insurance.
Dear, I think you printed off the wrong email.
Dear Flop House, Mr. House, are you looking for lower rates for your auto insurance?
Okay.
It's titled Flop House Found in the Boonies. My girlfriend and I went camping last weekend. And out of the middle of nowhere in the El Dorado National Forest, stopping for gas/food/world-class shitty cup of coffee, at the checkout counter we encountered a quick pile of three DVDs. Desperado on top, then Vantage Point, then 12 rounds.
Whoa.
So I'm not quite sure why you're getting your movies from a truck stop way the hell out in the middle of California.
We are.
And I look forward to you handling Desperado. And oh my god, you're selling your DVDs to that store and I must know why. So why? Are you desperate to send floppers in the El Dorado National Forest? Why?
I think a real question is why people don't write more letters that are hard for Dan to pronounce.
Yeah, I like them. Well, I think he's found our secret movie source, which is the cafe at the El Dorado National Forest.
It's getting expensive to fly out there every couple weeks.
And then keeping the DVDs in some kind of a freezer tank, pressurized tank, so that they don't get ruined.
So that they survive the trip, yeah.
I'm still not sure that that's an expenditure we really need to...
I've run the numbers. It's the only way to do it.
Most of the time, we're on a motorbike, and that doesn't use that much gas, right?
Yeah.
With the double sidecars, of course.
Double sidecars is, of course, yeah.
A double sidecar?
No, not a devil sidecar. Double sidecar attached with double-sided tape.
Now, you would imagine that that would be a sidecar on each side of the motorcycle.
No.
One of the sidecars has his own sidecar.
Mini sidecar. I sit in that one. Stuart sits in the big sidecar. And Dan actually sits in a sidecar on top of the motorcycle.
Yeah, because if I was in charge of the driving, then...
The motorcycle drives itself. It's magic.
Yeah, and speaks with a Brooklyn accent. Yeah.
It's a robocycle.
It's a Brooklyn robocycle.
It's like the
where you guys going to today? Just take us to El Dorado, Bikey.
Aw, I want to see some other national parks.
You shut up. You take us there.
You gotta be taken for a man with these robocycles. They will roll all over you.
Oh, yeah, with their sidecars and everything.
Jerks. Anyway, this last letter is titled Purpazoid.
Last letter of the night. Only one more letter. Let's do it right. One last letter to make it last. Don't go fast. It's the last one tonight. Last letter. Dan, you have the floor.
It's titled... See, the problem is, like, you sing...
With that one.
The problem with your songs is you sing, I take a drink, I don't know when your song's going to end.
Hey, I don't know when the song's going to end either. The song tells me.
You're doing it, dude. We want people to imagine that Elliot's practicing this shit with us.
Yeah, with a full orchestra.
So this last email is titled Purpazoid Number 2. From Stephen, last name.
Whoa, is someone attempting to gain the throne, Purpazoid number 2?
Well, listen, and you'll learn.
Wouldn't that be your long-lost son?
Stephen, last name withheld, says, Dearest Floppers and House Cat, a couple weeks ago I was recommended that I listen to your podcast, and the time since I've been working my way through the archives.
It's
at least
a disappointing week.
I've been working my way through the archives, at least every episode with Elliot. I find episodes without him to be intolerable.
Yeah.
Because just as Dan is the essential boring Leonardo or Cyclops, Elliot brings the rogue element of a Raphael or a Gambit, and I guess Stuart is Donatello or Forge? I don't know.
Now that doesn't make any sense.
Anyway.
I'm always working on the Blackbird.
True. You are always working on the Blackbird or fighting the adversary.
Anyway, I was wondering why...
With your ill-defined Indian powers.
He says, anyway, I was wondering why Dan is often referred to as Purpazoid number 1, when it seems clear that Stuart is
the
perviest flopper.
Did you write another fucking email?
Maybe. I haven't heard the specific episode yet where all this becomes clear, but this mystery has eluded me so far. Keep on flopping, Stephen, last name with
O. Oh, man, I think I got a fucking enemy over here.
Owl
Madrigal wrote this one.
Owl Madrigal, who lives in a tree.
Well, thanks, Stephen, if you exist.
Allow me to explain why I think Dan is Purpazoid number 1. Stuart is so open with his sexuality that it's almost...
And I'm too mad right now
almost,
to talk about it.
That was a very Cam from Modern Family type of line. But Stuart is so open with his sexuality and so innocent that it's almost... There's something adorable about
it. You're saying I'm not open? I'm talking about it all the time.
It's like when a baby... it's like when a three-year-old grabs a woman's boob. Like, how can you get mad? It's adorable. Mm-hmm. Dan, on the other hand, is...
It's like an 80-year-old man grabbing a woman.
Well, I do it. It's Rodney Dangerfield saying something awesome.
Exactly. But with Dan, it's like if there's a guy in a suit with a briefcase who is just on the subway... And then suddenly he just turned to a woman and was like, tits, and then turned away. Creepy. Super creepy.
So he opens up his briefcase and it's filled with Sherry
what
magazine.
What I'm hearing.
You know those phone book size things?
All I'm hearing is that I'm being punished for being an upstanding member of society most of the time. And then I let you guys in. I let my hair down. Yeah. I have a moment of honesty, and all of a sudden I'm slapped down. I'm slapped down by you assholes. That's what I'm hearing.
So now you're mad.
Why is everyone mad all of a sudden?
Because of these letters.
These letters are tearing us apart, guys.
Guys,
our fans are getting in between us.
Let's not let these letters destroy us, okay? You can both be Purpazoid number 1.
Elliot's just excited right now because nobody's calling him out on anything.
Actually, I have a revelation to make to both of you.
What's that?
The fact is, the reason I know that Dan is Purpazoid number 1 is because I am Purpazoid number 2.
Oh my god.
I am the second in the Purpazoid sequence. I'm just better at hiding it than Dan and far less creepy.
See, clever listeners of this episode will realize that not Elliot's family doesn't listen to this podcast, nor does his wife. So he is okay to say whatever he wants.
Listen to the clues of previous episodes and you'll see I'm also attracted to women's boobs. And I'm just as perverted as Stuart and Dan. But instead I talk about old movies as a way of not revealing it.
Magic greatest secret was revealed, guys.
Yeah, that was magic's greatest secret. Houdini is turning in his grave now that I revealed that one.
All right. Well, you did...
Call Penn and Teller, because I'm revealing magic.
You were late to the podcast tonight because you had to fondle some dildos for the show that we worked
work.
On.
That was for my day job. I was being paid to do that.
You were being paid,
I was being
to,
paid
touch dildos.
To touch dildos on television.
He can control himself. He can wait to touch dildos at home until... Yeah.
It's
it
like
doesn't impede in his podcast.
It's like David Cross's old stand-up joke about the, how they sell porn at the airport and how he can wait till he gets home to masturbate. He doesn't need to do it on a plane. I feel like Stuart would do it on a plane, but in a way that people would be like, that's adorable. Dan would do it on a plane under a blanket, and everyone would be like, oh, what is he doing? Whereas I would wait till I got home, close the door, and then
go crazy. I would come out of the bathroom and announce that I just made it to the Mile High Club and start giving out high fives.
Exactly, with toilet paper trailing off your sneaker and just holding a Playboy with the centerfold hanging open in your other hand. And people would be like, oh, it's the original party animal.
That's
and meanwhile,
me.
Dan is furtively just like glancing at the person sitting next to him yeah. while he comes at it under a blanket.
He's watching the movie Bug on his laptop.
Why don't they love me? Why don't they love me like they love him?
Well, what? Well, and I'm just sitting there going, get me off this plane.
All right. Well, we've somehow managed to talk about passion play for a long time, so we should speedily...
We must have been passionate about it, guys.
Yeah, we should...
High-five that one.
Oh, God.
I hope you heard that on high-five.
We should speedily give our recommendations for movies that we actually like and think people should go out
yeah.
and watch.
Go watch them now.
Okay, I'm going to start. I'm going to recommend a little movie called Castle Freak.
No.
I know.
Like it? No.
I know.
You son of
a... It's a great movie.
Does it have a scene where a guy rips his own
he's a freak, so you, it's cool. But he just rips it right off. Like, it was there for a second, then all of a sudden it's gone. Ripped off. Okay, Dan, your turn.
I
think that brings it up to 99 Castle Freak recommendations. At 100, you get a free Castle Freak.
I watched a movie...
And I can rip off his ding-dong, too.
I watched a movie just two nights ago. It's on Netflix Watch Instant, so it's available for all of you people out there who have Netflix.
And eyes.
Yeah, well, and a viewing implement, yeah. Streaming. But I watched a movie called Dead End Drive-In. And this is a...
Dead End Drive-In?
Dead End Drive-In.
Dead End Drive-In.
Yeah. This is an Aussie film from the early 80s. It was actually... Featured briefly in that Ozploitation documentary,
Not Quite Hollywood.
The guy who directed it, the most famous film he directed was BMX Bandits. But I looked up on IMDb, the editor of this movie actually went on to edit a lot of famous movies, including Christopher Nolan's last five movies.
Huh.
Dark Knight Rises, obviously, included in that bunch. And it's a movie about... It's a post-apocalyptic movie about... this sort of car culture. It's a bit of a post Mad Max like knockoff in that it's car centered, although not as much. There's not as much like chase scenes in it, but it's about how the government has found a way to get rid of undesirables by turning this drive-in into a weird internment camp. Like these car punks go into this drive-in and then they get locked in and they've got no way to get out. And so they have to live in this prison and the main character needs to figure out a way to break out of this drive-in. And it's actually really beautifully shot. If you like 1980s style post-apocalyptic films, it's...
That's a little niche, but that's okay.
And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably don't.
It might be a little niche, but it hit all my sweet spots.
Whoa.
It's a beautiful looking movie. It's got like weird, and if you love drive-ins, it's got great loving shots of weird like neon drive-in and like people just hanging out in this half party, half prison. And it's a really fun movie. So that's my recommendation.
I'm going to recommend very quickly a movie called Blast of Silence, which is available on the Criterion Collection on digital video disc. And it is a low-budget film noir crime thriller from the very early 60s, late 50s. I think it's around 60, 61, about a man who is a killer for hire who goes to New York City on a job and has some trouble accomplishing the job but has to go through with it. But he doesn't really want to, and he wants more out of life and realizes he can't have it. It's passed him by. It's a really short but brisk thriller that with
short
more
but brisk.
Well, you know, Passion Play was short but deadly long and boring.
That's true.
But it moves quickly. There's
sapped every ounce of will to live from us.
And another one of these movies that was shot on location with a small budget, so there's a lot of great shots of what New York looked like around that time period. And there's a voiceover going through it that is equal parts kind of great film noir philosophizing and purple prose nonsense, and is really fantastic. So I recommend that as a real nice, bleak noir movie that you may not have seen, Blast of Silence.
Yeah.
So three for Castle Free.
No.
Yep.
That was Passion Play, guys. Hooray, we're done. We did it.
Yeah.
Let us out of this drive-in.
All right. So for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And let me check. Elliot Kalin, that's me.
Well, I don't know why you reached into your pants to figure that out.
That's where I have it written.
Okay. Yeah, good night, everyone.
Boom. Did it.
Stuart, you're the one who makes me laugh when I listen to it, and Dan, you're great too. And Elliot, you're the best. Thanks, Elliot.
Who?
Elliot.
I'm not familiar.
Not the evil version of you, Elliot.
No.
He's got a goatee.
Or the smelly version of me, Smelliot.
Mm-hmm.
Or the one who's gelling, Jelliot.
Elliot, the Belliot, Kalin, as you called yourself.
As I called myself once, because I was making it up as I went along.